relationships with teachers as well. I think for us, the more we connect, the more we share great ideas and get feedback from like-minded individuals out there on social media, the bigger and the better we become as teachers. And it's obviously, it's all for the benefit of our students. And that's why we are here. I want to say thank you to the organizers. I've been primarily dealing with Lisa and Maria Schneider, and the task force have put together an amazing lineup. If you didn't have a chance to see some of the sessions yesterday, there were sessions on social justice, social health from my good friend, Scott Todnum, who's a health teacher of the year that I learn a great deal from. And there was also something on advocacy as well, which is something that's very important at a time when I think health and PE is going to face challenges. Particularly with the remote teaching, it's important that our voices are amplified. You can go back and watch any of those presentations again. They'll be shared with you by the team. And I urge you to share those with coworkers as well and anybody else who you think will benefit from hearing strong messages. I also note that I can see that Anita Schaefer is on there somewhere. I see you, Anita. Anita just launched a new blog, her own blog. It's the first time that she's set up a blog that will be targeting middle school health teachers. So if you're a middle school health teacher, check out Anita's new blog. All the details are out there on social media. I am going to share my screen. And this is always the most awkward part. I'm going to share my screen and I'm going to go to my presentation. Today, I will be presenting to you using Canva. Here's my Canva. I've also got people's faces here. I'm going to hit present. If you haven't used Canva before, Canva is a really awesome way in which you can. I'm just trying to make this present. Come on. An awesome way in which you can create posters and infographics and here we go. And postcards and everything. Let me just, do that. Click that all the way to the beginning. There is a chat box in the bottom. I wonder if people can drop conversations in there and we'll attend to those whenever appropriate. Feel free to interrupt me at any time. It's very difficult as a presenter to present to silence. So I'm just gonna presume that they're all paying attention unless somebody points out something later on. So here's my main slide. So like I said, I'm presenting with Canva. In the bottom right-hand corner, there's a bit.ly link, bit.ly/, this is all capitalized, Milne, Ohio. You will want to access these slides because these slides are all interactive. Because we have a limited amount of time and I've got so much good stuff to share with you, I've embedded everything in there. So you'll get the hang of that as we go along. So if you have a second device, if you have a cell phone or an iPad or something, why don't you check out bit.ly, Milne, Ohio. It should take you to my presentation in Canva. So here are all of my contact details. I forgot to mention that whenever I try and present, I try and make the colors appropriate to the location. I went and looked at the hex code colors for the Ohio Buckeyes. So these, I'm presenting in Ohio colors today. You can contact me and I promise I'll get back to you as soon as I possibly can. I used to say 24 hours, but with the pandemic, sometimes it takes me a little bit longer. You can email me, share me your good stuff, bounce some ideas with me. I'm more than willing to engage with any passionate educator out there. As was mentioned earlier, you'll see the WordPress logo, slowchathealth.com. It's a blog post that I've been running for the last 5 years. It's an opportunity for health teachers to just share amazing stuff. We try and have a new blog post every week. There have been guest bloggers from Australia and New Zealand and Canada and the UK, but primarily from the US. And I know that there's a couple of people on right now who have blogged for that website, including our latest blog post from Maria Schneider, Ohio's very own Maria Schneider. Yeah, big shout to Ohio. If you are a health teacher looking to bring some health skills to life, or if you've ever run a field day and you're just looking for a new twist, check out the latest blog post from Maria. It's been very, very popular. And obviously you can track Maria down on social media. If you've got any questions, she'll obviously be willing to help you. I am on social media a lot, which sometimes takes me away from my kids. Twitter is where you'll find me inhabiting most of my social media space. If you're not on Twitter, I really do encourage you to jump on. I know it can be a little bit daunting at times, but there are so many great educators out there. And if you wake up in the morning and you've got a wonderful idea and everybody else around you is asleep, somebody will be awake in the world somewhere, Australia, New Zealand, UK, and they'll bounce ideas with you. I find it to be a very welcoming space. And of course, you can block people that you don't like. I've got a SoundCloud link on there. Sometimes I create podcasts. I create podcasts with my students. It's an opportunity for me to amplify their voices. And I'm all about amplifying student voice. So you can listen to me and my kids on the SoundCloud page. There's an Instagram icon there as well. I'm on there. I have a couple of accounts, but you can find me tweeting as Carmel Health. And then finally, there's another link there. And that's where else you can find me. I've been a guest on a couple of podcasts. So you can find stuff on there as well. As was mentioned earlier, I think I'm going into my 25th year of teaching. I taught for 12 years in the UK, bumped into an American girl in a bar. That's a completely different story we'll talk about another time. And now I find myself teaching here. I started teaching at Carmel Catholic, hence the reason why my Twitter handle is Carmel Health. Then I moved to New Trier High School. I find myself now teaching in a school with 4,000 students over two campuses. We're a one-to-one school. We're very affluent. Education is funded in Illinois based on property taxes, which is extremely unfair for most of the residents of Illinois, but we luck out as a result of that. So money really isn't a problem for us as teachers. It is for some of my students. Very supportive administration who encouraged me to go to conferences and learn and share. There's 36 teachers in my department. That's health, PE, and dance. That doesn't include driver's ed and all the other things as well. I work alongside two other national teachers of the year. That's how strong my department is. So I'm swimming in a very supportive, amazing environment. And all that does is continue to sharpen me as an educator. I teach health and PE. I'll be sharing ideas for both. If I start talking about health and you're not a health teacher, don't switch off, because within 5 minutes we'll come back to PE. And here's, I guess, some of my identities. I'm a presenter, I'm a blogger, I'm a husband, and I'm a dad as well. And I think at some times in my career, I very much saw myself as an educator. I was an educator, and that's what I wanted to be and be identified as. Now, with the result of the pandemic, I find myself kind of moving back to focusing on my family, focusing on myself, and then focusing on my students in front of me. So that's gonna be my focus for the next year. I think I tweeted something out recently that said that it's okay to do less right now, because we're dealing with more. And I think that's the same for us. Self-care is very important. And that's the same for our students. If we're not in a good place, then we can't be the best for our students. If our students aren't in a good place, then they're not gonna learn from us. The reason why I put the 25 years of teaching is, if some of you have been teaching for as long as I have, in fact, you could even drop that in the box right now. If you've been, I'd love to know how many years do you have under your belt? Do we have any future professionals here? Do we have anybody teaching longer than me? Perhaps you've even retired. How many years did you get under your belt? When we went into education was different. The social emotional aspect really wasn't a thing. You heard Amanda talk about social emotional learning a little bit earlier. Teaching was something that we did to students. It wasn't something that we do together now. And I think seeing education through a relationship building lens is critical. I was taught not to smile at kids until Christmas. I was taught not to use students' first names, because that's how it had worked for those teachers. And I was very much a different teacher back then. I think if I look back at some of my practices when I was teaching in the UK, I would probably be quite embarrassed of the way I approached my relationship with some students. Here's an example of a slide with a link. I've got a Twitter link in the top left-hand corner. If you were to click that box, it would take you to this tweet. Brad Johnson said, hey, what was one thing that you didn't learn in your teacher prep program that didn't prepare you for being a teacher? And I put down that every child matters. I don't think I appreciated that. And that's every day. We need to be there 100% of the time for 100% of the students. I was not taught that the emotional connection was important and it was something that we should strive for. 25 years into teaching, I love what I do. I'm more passionate now than ever before, but it's all part of a journey, all right? We're still striving to be that best teacher that we can. I'm still striving for mastery now, despite everything that I've learned. So I think it's important to understand that we have to be there for all kids, not just the jocks, not just the quirky kids, not just the kids who sit up and look engaged in class. We have to be there for all of them, the quiet ones, the ones that are absent. Anyway, I'm rambling. Here's a link in the top left-hand corner. It's the only link that's currently broken because for some reason this website is down today. But why, I'm going to talk about why we need to build those relationships. Amanda Dieter's session earlier was very, very good. If you want to know more about the theory, what's going on in the brain space when we talk about relationships and how to navigate that, go back and watch Amanda's session. But we know that the engaged students are more likely to, that the students with the good relationships will engage in healthy behaviors. They'll stay in school for longer. As a result of that, they'll succeed academically. They'll feel safer. We have a reduced incidence of sex, alcohol, drugs, and violence, and our youth risk behavior survey data shows that. But very importantly, I think we can identify that we do have students in the building that may be at risk. Perhaps our LGBTQ students are at risk and need that connection. Perhaps at my school that's predominantly white, my students of color are more likely, we're more likely to see spikes in risky behavior. We do our own youth risk behavior survey in the building, so we can break that down by gender and identity and by race, and we can see where there are pockets of needs in the room. Click that link and you can read a little bit more about the theory of why it's so important for us to make those relationships with our students. And earlier today, Amanda talked about Castle, based out of Chicago. This really is the reading that you need to be pushing out right now. They put a report together to help schools and teachers think about what does that transition back to school look like. I know for some teachers on social media, school has already started. It's a horrible thought for me. And I know there's a lot of uncertainty right now. Right now, we're going back to a hybrid model, but we don't know whether that's going to happen. I have to admit, I would prefer a remote situation. Because I think it might be safest. But whatever your school is thinking, click that link. It's a massive document with so many live links. Castle collaborated with a number of like-minded organizations to work out what was best practice for us to return to school. And I've got a couple of screenshots from their website. They put relationships as number one. So the first thing that Castle is saying is that we must build relationships when we return to school. Each one of those blue links, a blue text on the screen right now, is a live link to another resource from the 40 collaborators that you can just dive into. This is a document that you will want to spend some time, make a cup of tea, sit down and check this out, and then share everything with your coworkers as well and your administration if they're not listening. Here's another screen as well. All these different opportunities for you to build adult, student, and peer relationships. There's so many great ideas there from so many really good service providers. Each one of those service providers, you could get lost in a wealth of wonderful resources. So yes, you can access this slideshow. Yes, everything that you see in the top left-hand corner is a live link. I like to do that as best I can. When we return to school, if we return to school, here are some of the things that I think we need to do. We need to acknowledge the trauma of the pandemic. Okay, I haven't seen my students since the back end of February. I know some of them are juggling some horrendous situations in terms of just coping with this. I know of deaths within my community. I know of family members who have lost jobs and having to move away to seek work. And I don't think we can turn a blind eye to that. I do think we need to give voice to our students' thoughts. Let our students know that we care about them. Like I said, if we see education through that relationship building lens, this becomes easy. I'm just going to share ideas that work for me, but I don't know your students and I don't know your community, so I don't know what works for you. But we must make reference to the pandemic, and there's a great opportunity for you to find out a little bit more about your students. We have to acknowledge the trauma of recent protests. I do teach in quite a liberal school, in a fairly liberal community as well, and I think we are very socially and racially aware. We do a lot of training with our schools, but I think we need to acknowledge the trauma of the current protests and also be aware of the fact that we are in a run-up to a very politically hot situation. So I think, again, we need to give voice to that and allow students to feel that they can share their views if that's something that is allowed within your school building. I want to ask you, does every single student see themselves in the curriculum? I think too often we hear of students saying, this wasn't valid for me, particularly in health. Okay, I think it can be easy for health teachers to avoid the controversy, perhaps, or the difficulty or the awkwardness of having conversations about race and gender and identity. But if we don't have those difficult conversations, then some of our kids are going to switch off, okay? And if our kids switch off and don't listen to the messages that we're trying to push out to them, then that puts them at greater risk. So we need our LGBTQ kids, we need our minority students to make sure that they see themselves in that in the curriculum. And that means you're going to have a conversation with them. And you're going to have a conversation with the support groups within the building as well to find out what they need. So you must listen to your students. I've said this here, are you 100% there for 100% of your students? And I think I'm stealing that as a quote from one of my kids from just last year. And finally, I think we have to play the long game. Okay, you cannot turn up to work, teach the students in front of you, pack your bags and go home again. And you can't think, well, I only have them for a semester, or I only have them for a year, and that's all. That, and then my job is done. It's not. You have to teach with the long game in mind. It's not about getting that A in this semester. It's about getting that A in life. And there's a quote here. This came from a student of mine. Because I read every single word that every student writes, I found this nugget in a written piece of work about 12 years ago. A student said, in health, it's not just about getting an A in class. It's about getting an A in life. And that's my philosophy. And I let my students know that. If you want the A, take the A. Okay, that's fine by me. I'm more interested in, will you continue to engage in healthy behaviors and advocate for those around you when you leave my classroom? So that's how I teach. It's not about read the workbook, do the packet, turn it in, and there's your A. It's about engaging and in learning and putting into practice the health skills that we are teaching our students. So that's my philosophy. I have that in a poster. It's up on display. I've also made buttons. And I've also printed that on a couple of sweatshirts as well that I wear because I'm such a nerd. My philosophy for PE, kind of taken from some of the stuff from Shape America. Competence, confidence, and motivation. I let my students know this. My PE students at the end of the year could throw this back in my face. I want my kids to feel competent in the classroom. And that's really important. I teach juniors and seniors. I've got 17 and 18 year olds still in Illinois. We're lucky that daily PE is a thing from K through 12, but it is being eroded. And I wonder if as teachers retire, we won't see them being replaced. However, and when I get kids, I teach a PE elective called Lifetime Activities. All the sporty kids go to team block and they go hard and they sweat and they probably get graded on going hard and being sweaty. My kids who come to me have been told that they're not that great at PE. So they don't have a great deal of confidence and competence. So I encourage my students to change the rules of any game or activity that we do so that they have some success. I want my kids to feel that they can take ownership of the instruction. If I'm setting up rallying over a net in badminton and they're not having any success, change the rule, lower the net, have a bigger implement, give yourself a second serve or a third serve. I want you to feel competent so that when you come back, you feel confident. If I can increase your confidence in our time together, I know you'll be motivated to join in again tomorrow or the next time I see you. And also you'll be more motivated to seek out movement opportunities in later life. That is my job, okay? I want my kids to love movement from a PE background when they go out into the community and beyond. On the right-hand side is an example of a sticker that I had made up. Kids love stickers for some reason. So I give stickers out. I just kind of secretly give them out. All my stickers, I print them with Sticker Mule. Stickermule.com. Sign up for their offers. There's always a great deal going on. I had buttons made up with pronouns. I had some he, him, she, her, and they, them buttons. And I just wear them around the building. And every now and again, a student will look at that and say, huh, do you have a they, them, or, you know, I've got a friend who needs a she, her. I just let students know that I'm looking to make a connection all the time. So I give those buttons out for free for students. I'm not seeing the chat box, but let's pause right now. Are there any chats, any conversations in the chat?
Yes. The first thing that I want to share with you, the age range of teaching experience was 3 years to 33 years.
33, you're my hero.
How do we acknowledge trauma of personal things that occurred over the summer for that student and others who may not know how to address it or may feel awkward?
Okay, wonderful question. So A little bit later on, I'll share some writing activities that I do in the health classroom. I think what we need to do is make sure that students understand that our classroom is a safe space and that we are someone that they can come to and talk to. It might not be, okay? I'm there for all of my students, but I appreciate that not all of them would want to share things with me. I'm also very fortunate that we do have a number of support groups within the building. So there's always somebody else I can bounce my students to. I'll have those conversations with students. I'll model my own trauma, perhaps, if it's appropriate in the classroom. So I let students know that it's there. Kids can stick around at the end of the classroom and have a conversation with me. I also make sure that they know where all of the support groups in the building are. So I've got posters in the room that says, here's the room for social work. Here's the number that you can call. Here are all the other support groups and affinity groups that meet within the building. I want my students to know where they can find support within our four walls. I also then want them to find out where can they find support within the community, and then how can they then find some of those global websites as well. So that's a great research opportunity in the health classroom. You kids, identify an issue or a concern within the building, do some advocacy work, find out where the support is within the building. If there isn't any, start advocating for it. Also then find out where the support groups are within the local community. So I think it starts school, community, and then global. Not everyone's going to want to share. But yeah, just keep those relationships open, communication lines open, and I think it will be a little bit easier for all. Other questions?
That's it. Then somebody else shared a great idea.
Wonderful. So. I want to hear about it later. Okay. Top left-hand corner, there's another link there for you. A couple of TED Talks that you might want to check out. I adore TED Talks. I meant to share a link for a great review document. In fact, I'm going to make a note right now. I'll make sure I share that and embed that back into this slide because all of the changes are live. I've got a great document that you can use. Say you want kids to watch a TED Talk and then you want them to reflect upon it. A great thing to do if you need a sub. Let a sub watch a TED Talk. I'll share that with you so you can use that document. Just sharing a couple of TED Talks that advocate for the benefit of relationships. Susan Pinker's relationship, she did some research and she wanted to find out what was the key to a longer life. And then she shares a slide. Oh, in fact, it's on the screen behind her. The keys to a longer life weren't regular exercise, and it wasn't keeping up with your few shots, and it wasn't quitting smoking or drinking. It was close relationships and social integration. People who feel like they have a connection with those around you and people who feel like they are valued by those around you will live longer. It was the best predictor of longevity. So this is a wonderful opportunity for you to share this with your students and get them to do like a think, pair, share, or I see, I think, I wonder. What kind of questions do you have as a result of seeing that? And then how might you change the way you approach future engagements and relationships with others, now knowing that being connected with others means you can live longer? She talks a little bit about the neuroscience and when we engage with somebody, preferably face-to-face, that dopamine and serotonin and epinephrine and all those good feel-good hormones are boosted in the brain. They're also the same hormones that get boosted when you're active and in the PE setting as well. Okay, so there's a nice... link between the two. The next TED Talk I want to share is from Robert Waldinger. Robert Waldinger talks about a 75-year study where they took, they followed a group of men and they wanted to find out, again, what was the key to longevity. It's been running so long that at the time of this TED Talk, only 60 of them were left. So now they're looking at the offspring of the people in the study. But again, the biggest predictor of longevity was their relationships with others. People who were happiest in their social interactions at 50 were more likely to be healthy at the age of 80. Now I'm 49, I'm nearly 50, and I'm very happy with my relationships with friends and family right now. So I think I'm looking good to be healthy at 80, but check in with me in about 30 years' time. So again, there's another opportunity for you to sit down, watch a TED Talk, do a bit of PD. Right, super better, Jane McGonigal. Here is an activity that I do in the health classroom. I have also done this in PE. There's a link to a blog post that I've written about this, and then there's a link to buying the book. I think at one point this book was down to $9.99 on Amazon just last week. the plus one better challenge. So I'll sit down with my students, with my health students, and I'll say to them, think of somebody that you'd love to hear from right now, or think of somebody who would love to hear from you right now, or someone that you just haven't heard from for a long time. And I want you to send them a text message. All my kids have phones in their pockets. It's just inevitable. Send them this text message. On a scale of 1 to 10, how is your day going so far? When you receive that message, you know I'm thinking of you. And immediately your brain starts to fire with all of those hormones. Someone's thinking about me. And not only are they thinking about me, I need to now reflect and put a score on my day. So I feel good because I sent the text message. You feel good because you received it and you're going to send me a response. So somebody says, I'm a 7 out of 10. All you and you now received a response. Oh, that's really good. They listened to what I said. You now have to say, what can I do to make that plus one better? So if you're a 7 out of 10, I say, what can I do to make it an 8? Now I've showed you that I really care. And then we now opened up the opportunity for conversation. My students do this. I'm almost in tears with the results. They all send a text message and then you'll get responses coming in from mom or dad or the sister or brother who's at college or the friend where they used to live, but they've moved away and they no longer speak to. And they start sharing with me all of these like little explosions around the classroom of warm and fuzzy feels. It's really, really powerful. You can try this with the person at Trader Joe's or the person, you know, behind the counter at the store that you go to. It's a really, really powerful way to develop a relationship. A teacher in my department who I didn't have a great relationship with, she was walking down the hallway to me and she just looked beaten up. And I said, on a scale of 1 to 10, how's your day? She said, it's a 4. And I said, well, what can I do to make it a 5? And then we just had this conversation about she didn't feel valued and blah, 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 blah. And she just had a chance to unload some of the frustrations that she had that were affecting her that day. We ended up hugging each other, and I don't hug people. We ended up hugging each other, and now we just have a better relationship next time we see each other. I'll still have students who I taught 2 or 3 years ago stop me in the hallway and say, on a scale of 1 to 10, how's your day right now? Okay, and then I have to engage upon that. It's taken from Jane McGonigal's Super Better. I'm reaching behind me. Very, very good book. Jane and her identical twin sister have both done multiple TED Talks. What a family. She was a gamer. She was a gamer, and people used to criticize her for playing games too much. And she said, well, what if I take the theory of games, if I take game theory and apply it to my life? So she's all about little tiny quests and little power-ups. If you walk around the school building with your head down, avoiding contact, that makes for a very lonely environment. My way of looking at school, if I walk from one end of the building to another, every fist bump, high five, every smile from a kid is like Sonic collecting rings or Super Mario collecting coins. As I walk from one end of the building to another, those interactions are me leveling up on a daily basis. I can't have a bad day at school when I approach life like that. My commute to school is 70 minutes. I've saved so much gas during the pandemic. 70 minutes. Okay, if I hit a green light, I've leveled up. If I've hit a red light, so what? I know there's a green light coming. If we approach life with that kind of level up attitude, we're always going to spend the day with a nice smile. And then earlier, Amanda talked about making sure that the first 7 seconds of any interaction is a positive one. I'm going to keep talking, and if anyone wants to jump in, here's another activity that I do in health. I do this in lesson 1, lesson 2. We learn the ropes, and I often get asked, why do I use the word ropes? So there's an example of the ropes. It's all about learning to be a good sailor. So I do a ropes activity. On the board, I write R-O-P-E-S, and I ask students to think of words that we can remember in our time together that will make us have the most productive time in this semester. So they break out into small groups and they have a conversation with each other. And they have to think of an R word, a word beginning with R, an O, a P, an E, and an S. And what this does straight away is let my students know that we're kind of coming up with a contract. These will be the words that we'll remember in our time together so that we have the most productive time. It does bug me as we come into August, you see people with their laminated rules for the classroom. Here's the rules of the classroom. And when the kids come in, they're going to abide by my rules. That lets the students know I make the rules and you're going to follow them. My rules are so good. I laminated them. You can buy them on Teachers Pay Teacher. I let my students know that we're going to make the rules together. That means that although I'm facilitating the classroom, we're going to learn together. And they have as much of a voice in the classroom space as I do. So I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to let you have 2 minutes to think about words beginning with R, O, P, E, and S. And then maybe I'll call upon a couple. Drop them in the chat. Think of an R word, an O word, a P, an E, and an S. It must be a word that you think we can use to be good teachers and good students. I'm going to see if I can. Any questions that have come in, let me know. I can't see the chat more.
No questions right now.
Questions. Okay, I'm going to go back.
Maria posted your TED Talk.
Oh, I posted it later. I always get embarrassed to share it, but I am sharing it later. Thank you. Are people dropping in some R's, O's, P's, and S's yet?
Yeah, do you want me to share them?
Yeah, just read them out as they come through.
Okay, respect.
Lovely.
Responsible. Mm. Opportunity. Positive. Open. Mm. Purpose. Effort. Safety. Relationship. Engaging. Safe. Yeah. Patience. Mm-hmm. Resiliency. Mm-hmm. Engage. Perseverance.
And these are all really good. So what you can do is write them on the board. Sometimes I have a student helper with me. So I'll maybe get them to play teacher and they can write on the board, or get a kid to write on the board, because some students love to pretend to be the teacher. And then you could take a picture of those, or you could turn them into a poster and put it on display and say, here's the rules for the classroom. So a student put their hand up and they say, respect. And immediately I say, well, what does that look like or sound like in this space? The student then tells me what that looks like, and I say, that's a great word. Yes, we're going to put it on the board. And sometimes a student, penis. Yes, that's a great word. And we might talk about it in health, but that doesn't help me, have a great relationship with you in the class for the next semester. So nice word, but let's think of something else. So I don't put kids down when they share something silly. And that might be an S word. Okay. Sometimes we're silly and sometimes we're sensible. But right now we're trying to be sensible. I let everybody feel that it is a safe enough opportunity to put their hands up. Respect, opportunity, openness, be open to other people's mindsets. I've got kids who have moved in from different states. P might be a pass. I give kids the opportunity to pass. I might ask you a question one day and you say, you know what, I don't want to deal with this question. I'm having a bad day. I'm just going to pass. All kids have the opportunity to pass if I call upon them. P, preferred pronoun or proper pronoun or just pronoun. E, escuchar. I don't hablo español, but the kids do. So, it's all about listening in the classroom. S, safe space. You can share, and you will. Some students will share things in their writing that I need to report to somebody else in the building. So then it's an opportunity for me to talk about being a mandated reporter. But you can see that through this activity, and you can read more if you hit the link in the top left-hand corner, to see how I set it up. You can see how straight from the get-go, this is lesson one, lesson two, students know that we're all in this together and that I'm that kind of teacher, that I am there for them and their voice is valid, and it's everything they have to say is going to bring something to the table. And if I'm teaching 3 health classes, I let them know that period 2's health class will be completely different from period 5 and period 7 because of the dynamic of the space and what we bring to the table. Let me go back to my slides. Boom. Let me just make sure. Learn the names. This is so important. I wrote a blog about it. There's a TED Talk about it. Put a link in there to Jennifer Gonzalez's names as well. Learn students' names. It seems so simple, but I guarantee I've got teachers in my department who don't know students' names because they set up the space, maybe in PE, and then they stand on the outside. And maybe they walk around the outside of the group. They never dive in and get involved and have those conversations. I challenge my kids that I will learn their names within the first week or so. And I don't dismiss students until I've said their names. We make a big joke about, I might get Sabrina and Sally confused all the time. And there's always one kid's name that I get wrong and the kids joke about it. But I challenge them, stop me in the hallway and say, what's my name? I'm going to feel awkward as a result of that, but that's okay. And I also tell students to use each other's names in the classroom as well. If you can't ask somebody, wait a minute, what's your name? Then how, when we get to conversations in sex ed about STIs and previous relationships, how can you have that awkward conversation? How can I say, how many sexual partners have you had? And should we consider some kind of preventative method before and if we have sex, if I can't even ask you your name? So we really talk about the power of names. I talk about preferred names, and I make sure that I call students by their preferred names as well. But I think it's really, really important. And in one of those links, I share my favorite name game. We stand in a circle, we go around the circle, and I say the name of the person to my left. It's Peter. I'm Mr. Milne, this is Peter. Peter says, this is Mr. Milne, I'm Peter, and then the next person's name, and they go around until we've done all 30. It takes a while, but as Amanda said earlier, spending time at the beginning of the year, developing these relationships will make life so much easier later on. If I know a student's name, it's so much easier for me to call upon them or have a conversation with them. So spend this time now and you won't have to spend so much time fighting fires later on. Once we know each other's names, I set up another activity where I look across the hallway, the circle, and I say, Lisa. Lisa says, yes, that's her name. And then we trade places. Lisa then looks across and says, Peter. Peter says, yes, and they trade names. Eventually, we take away some of the communication so they can only nod, and then it's all done with the eyes. So we do, and I know I'm not explaining this particularly well. It's in the blog post. But then that's me foreshadowing conversations of consent. And then we talk about which of these was easier. It's the one where we were made eye contact and we were very open with our conversation. There was a yes before we engaged in any kind of movement. And then, so then that we then take a look at that and we say, well, this is what consent might look like. And then when we come to our consent conversations, they're just a little bit easier because students can remember back to that kinesthetic activity. If what I'm saying doesn't make sense, read the blog post. It will make a lot more sense. It's just a great way to have a name game that then is also useful in the health space. Empathy walks. All right, PE people, here's one for you. So when we go back to school, obviously we've got to think about, well, what can we do that doesn't involve shared implements and having to wash things? And can we do things and still socially distant at the same time? Here's a great thing that you can do in health and PE as well. I've taken it from the TED Talk from William Pullen from the UK. And I put together a walking curriculum. Walking is a really important activity and probably one of the most widely participated activities within your community. So why don't we actually use walking within our PE lessons? You can attend to standards, and I've got a slide on here that shows that you can attend to, these are some of the Illinois standards. You can bring in technology. You could look at pacing. You could look at step counting. You could look at perceived effort versus actual effort. You could do all manner of activities that involve students attending to the world around them. There's a wonderful book out there called The Walking Curriculum. The Walking Curriculum is all of these different themed walks that you can do that have a social emotional component to them. An empathy walk. Do this at the beginning. Give students an opportunity to pair up with someone that they don't know. They're given a themed conversation. One person is the question, is the listener, and one person is the answerer. So Maria and I pair up. Maria is just going to answer, and I'm going to pose questions to her for the length of the time it takes us to walk the track or walk a defined route. So I'm asking questions. It might be something like, hey, Maria. Maria just popped up. I might say, you know, what makes a good friend? What do you like about my friends? Do you think anyone in the class feels lonely? How could you make a friend feel better without using words? So I do all the questioning and then I have to listen to Maria. So Maria's kind of on the spot right now. When we've walked the 440 yards and we've come back to the middle, I then tell Maria everything I think I heard. I've learned a lot about Maria in that time. And then we get to reverse the roles and maybe we ask the same questions or we have a different set of questions. You click the link. I have the download so you can take away these kind of lesson plans. But this is an activity that I have had students come back to and say, can we do this again? Can we do this again? Can we do this again? Because it builds relationships. which then makes it easier for my students to cooperate with each other next time they work together. Juniors and seniors sometimes stick together in cliques. I like to mix it up as much as I possibly can. I'm telling you, kids will walk away with so many of those dopamine, serotonin hormones flooding their brains. So the empathy walk is really good. You could also maybe set this with a sub. If you've got a sub in the building and you don't really know what to do, come up with some really good question prompts and get your students to do these and work with other people. I'm only seeing Maria's slide on the screen right now. There's me. Any questions? If not, I'll move on.
I am not seeing any questions. People are just sharing ideas.
They are. Okay, we'll have a Q&A at the end. And let's definitely share some ideas and make a note of those and maybe share those with people as well. Where am I at? Personalize the curriculum. Okay, this is really important. So it bugs me sometimes on social media when I see teachers say, hey, I'm teaching health for the first time. What do you recommend I teach? I mean, I don't know. I don't know you. I don't know your students. I don't know what your needs are. I've got teacher friends teaching health up in Minnesota, Minneapolis. They're teaching all about sex trafficking because that's a real big issue in their community and it isn't in mine. So they personalize the curriculum to target the areas of need that they have. My youth risk behavior survey data says that right now vaping is kind of on the increase, as it probably is in your school as well. Smoking marijuana, not so much, but alcohol, we actually outscore the national average. Yay, go Trivians. So that's an area that we must address because that's where there is an area of need within my community. I know the experience of some of my LGBTQ kids is not as good as my heterosexual kids, so my cisgender kids. So we will spend more time talking about gender and identity and being an ally for others in the building as well. So you must personalize the curriculum based on the needs. So health teachers, make sure you know what problems are affecting your community. Yes, there's some things that you have to teach and there's some things that you really would love to teach because they're your favorites. But really important is what does your community need? And when it comes to PE as well, is there a sport within your community that's just become the next big craze? Are kids all skateboarding? Then why don't you think about bringing somebody in from the community to talk about skateboarding safely? I used to, when I was at college in the UK, I was at a school that was near the coastline. When the surf was really good, kids would all cut school and they'd go surfing because they had to take advantage of the waves right now because they were so rad, dude. So what the school did was introduce surfing to the PE curriculum. So they got kids looking about how to read the waves, how to understand the weather, how to surf appropriately and correctly. Kids came back into school so they could become better surfers. So your PE provision has to serve your local community. There's no tennis courts and you've only got 7 tennis rackets. Why are you teaching tennis in the first place? There's me. I was fortunate enough to do a TEDx talk at my local library in front of less than 100 people. But I talked about how today's health class is all about making students better, more health literate. And they're going to walk away with health skills that they're going to demand to use within the community. They are going to feel empowered to use their voices. And they are going to want to advocate for themselves and those around you. So you need to find ways in which to make sure you're attending to health skills and find ways in which students can use those skills because it's all about putting it into practice. It's not about getting the A in class, it's about getting the A in life. Where can my kids go to use their voices? Where are the youth providers within the building and the local community where my strong advocates, and you know you've got a couple of them in the classroom, where can they go to find like-minded individuals and start to advocate for better provision for their peers. So I talk a little bit there about personalizing your community, your health class, making sure you're teaching the long game, making sure that health is taught by trained professionals who actually care about students and not necessarily coaches who are more interested in X's and O's as opposed to teaching X's and Y's. It's a joke I'm making the TED talk. Make it all about them. Here's an activity that I do at the beginning of the year as well in health class. You could do this in PE because you want to know more about your students. You can also do this remotely. Here's a written prompt for them. when it's all done and dusted and you've lived a healthy, happy and productive life, how do you wish to be remembered? What will people say about you? What words will they use to describe you? What will you have achieved that has made the most impact? This is a great opportunity for students to write personally about themselves. You'll hear about their the goals that they have for college and beyond. So you'll learn things that maybe you wouldn't learn about them just in the classroom space. I give each student a little note card on the front. I let them write their name, and maybe they kind of, you know, they're using their fancy fonts, and some kids have got really fancy handwriting, and they write their prompt on their answer to the prompt on the back of the note card. Top left-hand corner tells you how I do this and how powerful this really is, because essentially what you now have is a note card that is the kid's A in life, because they've just told you what would be the ideal version of themselves. So now we can keep coming back to them and say, well, what are you doing in your day-to-day life that's taking you closer to this A-grade version of yourself? Does your behavior match your goals? And we can talk about goal setting, and there's a great opportunity for you to weave in one of the health skills. This is really cool. You can then come back at it at the end of your time together and say, hey, remember that card? And you said the following. Have you made any strides towards becoming that person? This is very, very powerful. When I pushed it out as a blog post, it was one of the most widely read ones that I've written and get shared at the beginning of every school year. Do this with your kids. You'll know so much about them. And then that led to me journaling in health. I wasn't a great journaler in health because I found journaling difficult myself. But other teachers in my building had great success with just giving students the opportunity to write freely with some open-ended prompts that tend to be personal. So I've just got a couple of slides here. I had students bringing in journals. I bought some cheap journals on Amazon. And we would spend 15 minutes journaling on a Friday. Some people wrote for 15 minutes and they wrote for even longer. Some did it in 5 minutes, and that's okay. At the end of the time, I said, put your journals back in a box. I'm not gonna read what you wrote unless you really want me to. And some students would come up and say, hey, could you read what I've written? Because they kind of want you to know what they've written. And at the end of our time journaling, and maybe it was 6 weeks, 8 weeks, I would then have students reflect upon the journaling experience. So in the top left-hand corner, there's a link to 10 health benefits for journaling for teenagers. At the end of our time together, students would either share their best journal prompt or write a reflection. How was the journaling experience for you? You know, do you think you would use it to improve your health in the future? And then I would read that. So I'd grade the journaling reflection as opposed to the journals if they didn't want to. But here's examples. What makes you laugh the hardest? Oh yeah, read every word. Don't you dare ask students to write something and then not read it. That's just not fair. Okay, you have, and I know it takes time, but if it's worth setting that piece of work, then it's worth reading it. You want a good relationship with your kids? Read every word. Because you know they're going to come back and say, hey, did you read it? And you can't bluff that. Some other prompts. What obligation do you believe you have to your community? Another opportunity for students to see themselves as making change within the community. Would you live your life differently if you didn't care what people thought? How do you think your generation is different from previous generations? That's a good one. I often ask students how they think being a teenager is different from their parents' experience of being a teenager. And if you had the means to address a societal or global issue, what issue would you choose and how would you address it? You know, you have a kid say, I want to advocate for greater environmental awareness. And then you can point them towards the other students in the building who are running the environmental club every Friday at lunchtime. And you can start to put those students in contact with each other, start to make connections, because you know which of your kids are like gun advocates or LGBTQ allies. And you can start to match them up if you think it's appropriate. Journaling in PE. Here's something that I did remotely. I'm probably going over time, but stick around. I've got more to share. This is something that I did with my PE students. You know what? Teaching PE remotely is difficult, and I guarantee you've heard somebody in your community say, I bet it's a really easy job being a specials teacher during the pandemic. How dare they say that? My message to my students on a daily basis was, I hope you're being as active as you possibly can. But I understand that some of them couldn't. I could say, show me a photograph of you being active, But if you ask me right now, I've probably got 17 selfies on my cell phone right now of me being active. So I don't know if they're being active or not. So I did get my students to journal. And here's another way in which you can understand a little bit more about their experience. Reflect on PE in elementary school. If we've got any elementary school teachers online, okay, you have become my new heroes, because my 17 and 18 year olds, they write at length about how they loved elementary school and how fun it was and how they got to play and how it wasn't really bound by rules and everybody collaborated. No one cares if there was boys and girls and, you know, and no one cared how they looked. So they hark back to that and they write about some of the games that they played. Well, can't you bring that back into PE now? If you want your kids to enjoy the PE experience and they really enjoyed playing some silly games, get them to teach the silly games to their peers in class when they're back in the gym space. Reflect on middle and high school. Do a compare and contrast. I guarantee that once it hit middle school, some students switched off. And I guarantee that some students have had a horrible experience in high school PE, probably with one of your other, of your coworkers. So you hope that they don't name names. But then again, it's an opportunity for you to learn from what they're saying and make changes in your curriculum. Here's a cool one. In the top left-hand corner, there's a link to a Spotify playlist. Kids love music, and sometimes you like to play music in the classroom. I've got one person, who a teacher I work with, she plays 70s music all the time. I guarantee it doesn't speak to all of my students. So I had each student submit two songs, and I made two playlists. I had a pump-up playlist and a chill-out playlist. And I got my students to donate a song as long as it was appropriate, and some of the song choices didn't make the playlist. But now I've got some playlists on Spotify that I can just play as kids are playing badminton. Someone's ears going to prick up. Oh, this is my song. This is my song. Or a kid shares a song and you're like, this is an amazing song. Tell me more about how come you love this music? Because I love this music too. And I didn't think anyone loved this kind of music. Connect through music. It's a great way to open up a pathway to speak to a student. Connect through music, connect through shared interests. I let kids know what I'm reading, what I'm listening to, and what I'm watching. I have a post outside my health classroom. This teacher is currently watching, reading, and listening, and I update that every week or so. So again, it lets students know a little bit more about me. Connect through food. Food is a great way to connect through students. And I bring food in a lot in the health classroom when I'm talking about multicultural education. Okay, how can we improve our multicultural wellness? Or perhaps sharing and experiencing foods from other cultures is one way in which we can do that. Day four, get outside. Tell me about a memorable outdoor experience. Tell me about that time you went camping, hiking, biking, fishing. I want to hear about it. And then finally, tell me about your favorite way to move. Students don't think about that. How's your favorite way to move? Can I incorporate that in the classroom space? And what are you going to do over spring break? Because we were looking forward to spring break at one point, and then the pandemic shut it down. Decolonize the curriculum. There's a TED talk there from my good friend Pran Patel from the UK. I was asking this question when I moved over here. How come my PE curriculum is the same North American games invented by white dudes, right? What was the point of that? What are my students learning by doing the same lessons over and over again? I watched some of my coworkers teaching softball day one, throwing the ball backwards and forwards and catching. They did that when they were eight. My eight-year-old can do that. What are you looking to assess, and what kind of experience are you looking to give your students? And if you can get that through flag football, can you get it through a new game from a different part of the world that your students have never experienced? So decolonize the curriculum and open up your eyes to indigenous games. Find out the games from Australia and New Zealand. In the WordPress link there, there's a blog post that I wrote, and it shares a link to a document that Sarah Gitcher-Harmon, she's an amazing PE and health teacher in Missouri. She put this document together. She crowdsourced it on social media. So there's a lot of voices in there. And it was of world games and global games, games that maybe you've never heard of before that maybe you could try. One of my assignments during the pandemic was to get my juniors and seniors to research two of those random games, do a compare and contrast, and tell me, is it a game that maybe we could teach each other when we come back to PE? So think about opening your eyes to different games. I spent a little bit of time in New Zealand when I was younger. So I was fascinated by a game called Tapu Wai. Tapu Wai is a team game. The space is a bit like a court. It's a bit like netball. It's a bit like basketball. There's a little bit of lacrosse in there. So we learned the language. And then I taught my students this game. I then got together, that's Kyle down in New Zealand. I got my students pronouncing the Maori words that go with the game. And then Kyle's kids gave us the correct pronunciation. Now, 2 days before the pandemic kicked in, they were about to teach our students how to play the game. So they were going to film themselves playing Tapuwae. My students were going to watch it, ask them questions. And then the following week, we were then going to play Tapuwae. So Tapuwae is a great indigenous game. Another game I've really got my eye on is Kabaddi, which is a tag game from India and Pakistan. So open your students' eyes to global games. This is how kind of quirky I got. I had a couple of students in my class, real nerds, real geeks, and that kind of speaks to my inner geek as well. They were big Harry Potter fans. So when we had World Read Aloud Day, I read from Harry Potter. I read the small insert where he plays his first ever Quidditch game. We watched the insert from the movie where he plays his first Quidditch game. And then I taught Quidditch for a week. Some of the skills are very similar to floor hockey. But my kids didn't really want to play floor hockey because they played it every year for the last 11 years. So we played Quidditch. Follow the links. You can find the rule. In fact, I think the link on this page is a link to the official rules. There's college Quidditch. On the right-hand side, those two students there were in our fencing team. Of course I have a fencing team. The last school I taught at had a croquet team. Anyway, two girls are fencers and they said, can we teach fencing? So I went to the dollar spot. I went, got some noodles, cut them in half. I also used those noodles in my Quidditch lesson as broomsticks. And then they taught fencing. So they just looked at footwork and had an opportunity to be the teachers for the day, give some feedback. And I learned a lot and ached the next day. And we did some fencing. During the pandemic, how can I keep my connections going with my students? Take a look at your LMS. We use PowerSchool. Maybe you use Schoology or something else. Find out when the birthdays are of your students. Make a little note of it for each week and send them a message because no one wants to celebrate their birthday, especially my 18-year-olds, at home alone. So I just dropped them a little line and said, hey, I'm sure it's tough spending your birthday at home. Just want to let you know I want you to have a wonderful birthday. Have a great day, blah, 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 blah. It took me a little bit of time to go through and find out. Thankfully, on PowerSchool, each week, there's like a little birthday cake that comes, no, a candle that comes up in the attendance roster to tell you if there's a birthday. So I make a note of the week ahead and I just let people know I'm thinking of them. It's a little touch, but it's a birthday message and show students they think of them. Let them know you care. I've got an example here. At the end of my time with my students, this was for my juniors and seniors, I wrote them a postcard that just said, hey, I really enjoyed teaching you. Maybe I made reference to a thing that they did or a characteristic that they brought to the classroom. Also, because one of my written reflections was, tell me what your plans are for college. I was able to go back to that and say, hey, good luck at Ohio next year. Go Buckeyes. And they got a postcard. I'm going to tear up. I got emails from parents saying, wow, I can't believe that you even thought about my kid like that. He had a wonderful time in your class, even though he never told me that. Praise postcards. Sometimes we focus on the kids who are the loudest or the noisiest or the naughtiest. What about those quiet kids who just constantly just get an A, 100%, they turn work in, they're wonderful. I printed up some postcards. When I print my postcards, I use VistaPrint.com. Sign up for VistaPrint links. You can always find a good deal on there. 50 postcards might cost you, I don't know, $19. And I praise postcards. On the front, it said, yay, good job in health. On the back, I wrote a personalized message. Thank you for everything that you did in health. You made my life a little bit easier as a teacher. It's just a little thing that just lets kids know that they've been seen. End of year survey. Find out what your kids thought. All right, you might think you're the best teacher. I thought I was the best teacher first year out of college. Now I know I wasn't. But find out what they think. What did they enjoy? What did they not enjoy? What kind of feedback do they have? Sometimes they'll take shots at you and you just have to kind of have a thick skin and maybe learn from it. But find out what they like, what they didn't like. Even have a question. Hey, I want to make next year better for students. What do you recommend I do? Now students think that they're actually going to make some change for their peers or their siblings that you're going to get next year. So let them have some input. Students will say great things. Cut and paste that, save it somewhere. When you're having a rough day, go back and look at what your kids have said about you. I'm nearly finished. The link in the top left-hand corner. I think that comes from Berkeley, USA. Every year, Berkeley gives their incoming students a book list. They just so happen to have, the theme is connections this year. If you're looking for book list, book suggestions, then maybe go back in there and see if you'll learn a way in which you can make connections. that brings me back to that slide. I think we definitely can have a question and answer. Let's make this a safe, open space. I want to hear your good answers. I do know that next up is Kent Hamilton. Kent's going to talk to you about Bitmojis in the classroom. Ohio's, and Kent, if you're on there, better reference my blog post on how to make Bitmojis in the virtual classroom. A lot of contention on social media right now is whether Bitmojis are the be-all and end-all of education. They're not, but they're fun. Can't we have fun as teachers making Bitmojis? I'm going to stop talking. What's in the chat box? Who's got great things to share?
There aren't questions in the chat box.
Okay. I'm going to stop screen sharing. I'm going to stop screen sharing. Here we go. And then maybe I can see the chat.
Those of you that have shared ideas, why don't you guys unmute yourself and share? We'd love to hear your voice.
Well, I want to know what Mary Pat Martin said. OMG, if one more non... Oh, yes. That's the one about specials. Don't call us specials, okay? Don't call us specials. I wrote a blog post for Justin Schleider. Justin has a blog called slowchatpe.com. If you're a PE teacher, check out slowchatpe.com. I argued that calling us specials others us. And then if you can other us with your language, you can other us with the way you deal with us as well. We're not specials. We're part of a core curriculum. We're part of a balanced curriculum. So don't you dare call us anything other than teachers. I can see that Brian says, amazing job of information. How long will the presentation be available? That link is available forever. All right. So that bit.ly/MilnOhio. I'll never change that. I am going to go in and share a TED document with you. In fact, an easy way for you to find it, I'll make it the final slide. If you're looking for a generic slide that can be a document that can be used for all TED Talks, use that one. Antoinette says, I hate the word specials. Elective is better. Yes, because the students are electing to be with us, except they don't in Illinois where they have to be there. Oh, Lisa, respectful, optimistic, personalized, enhanced, special. Well, John, I'm going to call on Lisa every time I'm in the classroom with her. Oh, lots of ropes ideas. Seriously, use the ropes. It's a really great way for students to feel like they're involved. And I think you can do that online as well. You could, using a Zoom, you could definitely drop students into little chat groups, have them to have a little conversation, get to know each other, and then just come back. Hey, group one, give me an R word. Call upon that student, let them unmute themselves. I appreciate that teaching remotely is going to be difficult. When I was first asked to put a presentation together, someone said, hey, why don't you do something on teaching remotely? But you know what? You've been an expert in remote teaching as long as I have, and I don't feel like I have. And what I did worked with my students because I know my students and I had a relationship with them, and I guarantee what you did worked best for your kids. We won't know. Empathy walk. Do you give students a sheet with sample questions? Yes, Tracy, great. Yes, I do. I'll verbalize it, but I have. I'll take cards out and I'll have some go-to question prompts on there. So they can either take a picture on their phone and walk around with it, or they could take them away and then come back, trade cards, get a new one. Really, really, really try empathy walks. There's another walk out there. We were allowed to walk our local community and see all the millionaire houses and the Lake Michigan. But there's a lovely, unlovely walk. As you walk, you have to make a note of all the things that you think that are lovely as you walk. So you're looking specifically for lovely things. And you've all written a list of lovely things, and you pair up. And then I have to see the unlovely in your lovely, and you have to see, and vice versa. It's just a way to get kids talking and pairing and laughing and giggling and getting to know each other and seeing what they saw. Will you have a resource link or link? Sorry if you mentioned this. Yeah, Antoinette, check out the link. Also go to slowchathealth.com. There is such a work. There's 5 years worth of blog posts from health teachers and PE teachers as well. You can go back in there. You can search by keywords. It dries my figures up as well, which is always good. Mary Pat, in my district, we're now referred to as push-ins. Anita, push back against that. I think that's a horrible use of language, all right? And we have to speak up, right? Aren't we in a time now when we're speaking up? If I hear something, I have to speak up, all right? It's that whole anti-racist idea. You're racist or you're anti-racist. You have to speak up with everything that you hear. I heard a slur in a chat when my boy was playing Fortnite yesterday. I know the kid. I'm going to speak with him next time I see him, because you can't let it go. Be brave, have a brave, difficult conversation. Speak up if it's safe. Wow challenge, I took this over. Wow challenge, Brian Parker, unmute yourself. I wanna hear from Brian. Tell me about the wow challenge from Ben Landers, who is amazing, by the way.
Brian. Hey, how's it going? So I did my student teaching with Ben Landers down in South Carolina. So I have to say I was pretty fortunate to get to work with him ahead of time. And I've shared with some other people from Oford in the past. The WOW Challenge, what it is it gives the kids the opportunity as they exit the classroom every day. I create it. It can be based on affective, physical, you know, motor development, whatever the challenge is for the day. And typically I gear it toward, if I know there's some kids that were having some issues socially, you know, they're arguing with each other, whatever, I set that challenge up so that they can reflect. And as they, well, I have to modify it this year because we can't touch anything. So I used to have them tag out on the wall. And then if I saw someone tag out inappropriately, it gave me that opportunity real quick. Hey, come here, let's have a real quick conversation. We talk about it. And then I have them re-tag out with a little bit of guidance it gives them to say, okay, maybe I wasn't a wow. Maybe I need to come down here to need more effort or good job. And it's just a way for the kids to self-reflect and do a little bit of self-assessment real quick, but it also gives you that opportunity to make that communication as they exit the room, even if they've had a bad day. Some kids say, need more effort. And you say, hey, thanks for having, you know, thanks for being honest. How can we make that better next time? Or how can I help you stay on task? And it gives me that opportunity to make that connection real quick.
Brian, I like that. I can't find you on social media. Are you on Twitter?
Not yet. I wrote that down to make one.
You need to share your voice as much as you can. I want you on social media. Can you follow me at some point today?
Yes, I will.
Thank you. Everybody, get on social media and maybe not Facebook as much. Facebook, you joined it a while ago when you were younger, and then so did all of your racist relatives, and now you're finding it so difficult and you can't block them because then that's a horrible, how can you block your mom, right? But I've blocked some cousins. But Twitter's different because you get to refine that. So go on there, follow people like you, then start following people who aren't like you. When I didn't know how to have those difficult and brave conversations about race and gender, so I started following the experts in the room, reading what they were reading, and it made life a little bit easier for me. Barb, I've just shared that link for you, bit.ly/MilneOhio. Anita says, Twitter has been life-changing professionally. Anita, I've enjoyed watching you grow on social media over the last 6 to 12 months. That's weird. I have to sound like I'm stalking you, but I am. Anything else? Come on, guys. This is a safe space here. Jump on. Who's got something else to share that I don't know about? No one. Dramatic pause. You saw the contact details on there. You can contact me at any time. I will be writing. Oh, look, I've got cards here. That quote, in health, it's not about getting an A in life. It's about getting a class. It's about getting an A in life. I've got some cards that I'm going to write to some educators. I know that for some teachers, they are switching schools this year. So every year, if you're in my PLN and you're switching schools, I like to send you a little, hey, good luck in your new school. Thinking of you. Thanks, Brian. I know that Kent's on at 11:45. I'm guessing if people want to go, they can go. If they want to stick around, I'll close it out when the last person leaves. We'll be using the same Zoom link for Kent as well. I've not met Kent, but his social media feed looks good. He looks like he's got some great ideas to share. He looks like he's potentially a future leader / future teacher of the year in Ohio. I've never been to Ohio to present, so maybe one day I do. Every state that I present at, I treat myself to a Starbucks mug, except in Iowa, because Iowa didn't have any Starbucks mugs. How weird is that? So next time I pass through Ohio, I think I can treat myself to a Starbucks mug now. Thank you for taking the time during the pandemic and your vacation to watch this, whether you're watching it live or you're watching it in the future. If you like what you saw, please share it. If you've got friends in teaching who aren't on this, share it with them, share it with your people. This is an example of how OAFID is giving you value for money as a member. If you haven't presented at a conference, then now might be the time to do so. Consider getting together with others. If you don't want to present for 45 minutes, then why don't you share with, you know, get together with four other people and share 10 minutes of amazing stuff. The best advice I give is next time there's a call for presentations, just put in an application. If you don't get chosen, then you haven't lost anything. If you do get chosen, you've probably got a couple of months to put something together. So that's the best way to do it. You'll make it happen by putting it out there in the universe. Ken's on at 12:30.
Yeah. Ooh. Any further questions for Andy?
Actually, I did have one. Sorry, that was my daughter-in-law. Looking for, I don't even know if I'm teaching kindergarten this year or not, but we were just talking about this with a bunch of like young moms and my own grandson who has been out of daycare for 6 months now. So as we're talking about, as those little ones are returning to school and away from their homes, mm-hmm. like we're looking at a big adjustment just in that respect. And like any advice for that, you're going to have a lot of kindergartners coming in who haven't ever left home really for preschool or anything.
I think you know, you obviously look like you're going to be somebody who wants to develop a relationship with the students, but also keep the communication lines open with the family as well. Right. There might be something that's happening and the kid doesn't tell you. I had a few students just go missing during the pandemic. And when I reached out to parents, they said, wait, but I thought he was doing fine. He told me he's done all of his work. So for me, it's conversations with the kid first. I appreciate it's difficult at an elementary level. Then it's the parents. And then maybe there's a social service or there's a service provider that's working with them. Maybe there's a case manager. Maybe there's a social worker. Maybe there's somebody else who's working right. with that student. And if there isn't, then you start that intervention process. Maybe, you know, you do an RTI process or whatever, and you flag up any areas of concerns. I know that there were some really good elementary school teachers sharing wonderful things on social media. Adam Howell out in Oregon is amazing. If Ohio's mm-hmm. looking to bring somebody in, bring Adam Howell in. Adam Howell, H-O-W-E-L-L. He was broadcasting live PE lessons for elementary teachers on Facebook. And that was really fun to do. And I even joined in with my own kids as well. Lots of simple things that could be done in the kitchen space or, you know, in the basement. And I know that Adam's also living and dating Naomi Hartle. And she's also amazing as well. So you could maybe get a twofer if you're looking to bring in. And Naomi is a great tech expert as well. Someone like Antoinette says that she's not great on social media because she's old school. Hey, I'm old school too. But yeah, tech is a great way in which to reach our students more so than ever before during the pandemic.
Thank you.
All right.
Anybody else? Last minute questions for Andy.
Hey, Andy, I have a question real quick for you.
Yeah.
We're going back full time and, you know, we're going to have kids with anxiety going back. I know as of right now, we're going back full time. They're going to have anxiety coming back in general, but then they're going to come back to an environment that is completely different than they're used to. And I'm going to be teaching PE outside where they can't be more, they have to be 6 feet apart. You know, they can't share equipment or, you know, any suggestions on how to not only deal with the anxiety of them coming back, but now it's completely different for them and they have to adjust.
Yeah. Definitely name it and acknowledge that this is different for you as well. How many years have you been teaching, Tracy?
15.
Right, so 15 years, and this is the most different, most unique year. So definitely let them mm-hmm. know that and have that conversation. I mean, as a health teacher, some of our curriculum is going to go out the window because I think the social emotional piece is so, so very important. We're going to spend longer getting to know our kids than ever before. So all of these walking activities are going to be great. You know, maybe I can, I'll also, now that Trace has inspired me, I'll also share my entire walking curriculum that I've put together. I haven't really shared it with my department right now because it's probably still a work in process, but the link will be live. So anytime I change it, and I think I've put something like 12 lessons together that can be all based on just on 12 unique lessons based on walking. And I think you can walk the track and be 6 feet apart. So there's definitely going to be that. Once it comes to putting together lessons, you're going to, I'm guessing you can't share implements, or maybe you can sanitize implements in between. I wonder if you could use Frisbees and then drop them in a sanitary bucket that's got something in there. Any foot games, anything that involves like soccer passing, soccer moving, any drill that you did with basketball that involved passing and moving can be done with the feet. Maybe you then, once you've gone through some of those things, passing for accuracy, keeping the ball, passing and moving, you could then say to your students, hey, I've run out of ideas. What have you got? All right. And then have a couple of lessons where they sit down and they invent new games that are pandemic games. They'll be the first students to invent the pandemic games. Then they're going to leave that legacy behind with you. Let them be inspired by coming up. They might surprise you. Okay, and then hopefully things change or new guidance comes out, or eventually you go back to remote teaching because we realize that all going back might not be the safest thing for everybody.
Well, thank you, Andy.
Okay. So I'm going to share the walking curriculum. We're going to share that TED document. Anybody else thought about that? Is anybody else going back and they're thinking, how do I teach my favorite lessons, but I can't use any implements and all kids have to be hide and seek for 12 weeks? Orienteering. How about orienteering? Get into an outdoor space. Give the kids a map of the building or your space. I don't know if you're allowed to go out even beyond the four walls, and do orienteering. Simple map reading. Okay. It could be as simple as you go out, you hang, I don't know, 12 laminated things, right? Laminated signs. Or even get the little, maybe not the clickers, maybe there's a QR code that they can scan, or maybe there's some kind of illustration. They come to you and you say, right, this group, go get laminate, go find sign A, you get sign B, you get sign C. They all go away, you can watch them. And then as they come back again, you say, right, now go get B, you go get C, and they all go away again, they come back again. I think they call that a star course. Great opportunity for students to move in front of you and come back again, make them jog. I don't know, make them jog, take their heart rate when they come back, something like that. So there's one opportunity. Any opportunities to walk to a local feature? I'm not too far away from Lake Michigan. We'll walk to Lake Michigan and then we'll do some kind of breathing exercise. We'll do a mindfulness piece. We might talk about the plus one better challenge. I'll talk about blue mind theory and how being by a large body of water lowers our heart rate. And there's a great book called Blue Minds. And I've written a blog post, search for Andy Milne Blue Minds. You'll see my blog post on how I do a Blue Minds lesson, walking to water. We're going back full time. Somebody said we're going back full time, told outside as much as possible. Art and music must go to the classrooms. That was from Madonna. 37 years since Madonna's first album, apparently. Yeah, we want to go outside as much as we possibly can. Illinois weather gets bad about October time, November time, probably the same for Ohio as well. And I also know that other classes are also being encouraged to go outside as well. And going outside is a great opportunity. I don't know, maybe you'll get less students coming in than normal. Brian has a gym, plans to go out more than ever before. Absolutely. These are all great ideas. I think the chat also, when we stop recording, I think the chat gets saved as well. Mary Pat Martin is half and half. Yeah, at where I live, we're half and half. Parents have to decide whether they want to be all in or all out. And they have to say that now, and that lasts the semester. They're also asking teachers, do you want to be the remote teacher or the in-person teacher? But if you're the remote teacher, you have to teach remotely from your classroom. It's an interesting opportunity. Betty Kern says, maybe an amazing race type activity. Yes, amazing race type activity. Maybe there's some like minute to win it challenges that you could do. Somebody says an obstacle course. Again, you might have to be careful of body fluids and stuff. Or Mary Pat Martin, 2-3 days in, 2 days out. That's kind of what we're going back to. These are good. Keep these ideas coming. Also look out on social media for people sharing. There's some really good documents coming out of Shape America. Maybe OAFID has got something, or they are sharing stuff from other organizations. Health teachers, look out for anything from ETR. Look out for stuff from RMC. Check out Ken Guidance. Gretchen says, we're outside for 50 minutes and they've asked for a few pop-up tents. Yeah, obviously be aware of sun care as well. That's a good one. I mean, hit the track. I'm thinking of walking the track. Walk the curves, jog the straights, walk the bends, jog the straights. Maybe at every corner we do some body weight exercises. Maybe I prescribe the body weight exercises. Then maybe next week group A get to define the body weight exercises. Maybe they become the body weight exercise leader. I think that's a good one. We could work on fitness. Go back and take a look at your state standards. I don't know if your state standards make reference to anything that's academic or cerebral. We have to talk about the link between the brain and exercise. Get them to check out Paul Zientarski's amazing TED talk on the value of exercise and the brain. And then maybe get students to walk and read, walking and listening to podcasts. Get your kids to listen to Dr. John Ratey talking about spark theory. Plug in the headphones, go for a walk if they, you know, maybe share a headphone or whatever, or walk with a speaker. Walk while listening to podcasts. There's a great way to put a kinesthetic activity with a learning activity. Come back and do a think, pair, share. All right. Although we want our kids to be as active as possible, there is some academic side to what we do as well. We are teaching academic content. So go back and take a look at that. Do students wear step counters, or do they wear heart rate monitors? I mean, you know, in my affluent area, kids carrying a phone, There's a step counter built into that. If you don't have a phone, pair up with a partner, walk a mile and see do you think you'll be over or under 2,000 steps? Because 2,000 steps is kind of the rough guidance. Now I know that the 1,500 steps is my mile. Now I can monitor myself over the course of the week and see how many steps I take in the school day. All right, being active doesn't have to be going to a gym or running on a treadmill. It can be gardening. It can be walking the dog. You know, your kids are going to get steps walking between classroom spaces. Maybe they don't walk a direct route from classroom A to classroom B. Maybe you challenge them to take a longer route around the building. QR code scavenger hunts. Get your kids to do scavenger hunts. They run with their phone or with their iPad. And when they scan the QR code, they're challenged to do either 10 burpees or they're asked to do a question. And then they write the answer down. And by submitting the correct response, it automatically generates the location of the next QR code. All right, why don't you do something like that? You could do a QR code that takes kids to social work, to the school nurse, to where the AED is located, to the cafeteria. Get students to know where all the supports are within the building within the first couple of weeks. Wow, all these ideas, you're inspiring me. I should be making notes.
I think about the parents.
Anything else? Come on, where's all the other good ideas? I don't want to go away. Come on, this is free PD for me.
Anybody else?
Sorry, Tracy.
Oh, you're totally fine. I love it. I don't want you to go away either.
Okay.
I'm trying to take notes.
How about my bookshelf behind me? Isn't that a thing? All right, on my bookshelf. I'm not saying I put these here intentionally, but I did. If you're a health teacher, you must get this book. Anything by Holly and Sarah is absolute gold. And if you're an elementary school teacher and that's an area where there's a real gap in the market, they just pushed out an elementary one as well. Lesson planning for skills-based health education. If you go on Slow Chat Health, if you put Slow Chat Health lessons in your search engine, you'll find my review of the book. It's very, very good. This is the book that everyone's reading right now, How to Be an Anti-Racist. You'll want to read this with a highlighter. There's so many good things in there. You will just open your eyes to things that perhaps you didn't realize. And of course, we're going to put a name on this when we go back to our students. Somebody recommended When Likes Aren't Enough. This is all about social media and the effect it has on kids and what it means to be a teenager navigating that difficult location around social media. They just updated the book. So I think I bought the old version that's brand new for like $1 on Amazon. All right, there's my tip. Always go on Amazon and buy a used copy. Teaching Responsibility Through Physical Activity by Don Hellison, a great way. Don just passed away recently. He actually was the professor for one of my coworkers. He was all about teaching responsibility through physical activity. Here's a great way in which you can put more meat on the bones. I read an Indigenous Peoples History of the United States. I realized that we've had more than one racist president in the past. That's next up for me, Black Man in a White Coat. I want to make sure that I talk about intersectionality and race in my health classes. I want to talk about the social determinants of health so that students know that there's other factors that are affecting our health. I also need to pick a read, They Can't Kill Us All. It's about Black Lives Matter. The Joy of Movement by Kelly McGonigal. We did a book study on this one. This just talks about the connections that we make through moving and the way in which our brain is engaged through moving and our love of movement and what it means to move and how it can help us live longer and be happier people. I'm done. Thank you, Brian.
Now you got more in the chat room.
Oh, Permission to Feel. Maria Schneider says Permission to Feel. Permission to Feel is the word, the book that health teachers are reading right now. It's kind of all about putting a name on your emotions, identifying your emotions. We don't talk about our emotions much, which makes it difficult to then put a name on it and understand how we're feeling. Give kids the permission to feel. Let them check in with themselves and self-regulate. It's by Mark. I can't remember Mark's name. I have a digital copy of it. He also has an app that you can check as well. There's some really good colorful resources you can put in the classroom. Get kids to just check in. How are you feeling right now? I feel angry. Well, have a look. Are you really angry or is it something else? Are you frustrated? What are you frustrated with? Now I know what I'm frustrated about. Now I realize I'm not angry as such. It's just something else. Tracy says, has anyone got any great ideas on how to keep kids active in PE in their classrooms while wearing masks? Well, that's such a difficult thing. That's so unfair. That's so unfair, right? Because we need to move and we can't move in the classroom. If you can't get anybody, you shouldn't be doing PE in the classroom. It just doesn't seem safe to me. Health teachers, try and move as much as you can in your teaching. Use kinesthetic activities as much as you can. My favorite is a think, pair, share. What's it called? A something walk. I can't remember. Get kids to pair up, give them a prompt and just get them to walk and then come back again. So a popular one for me in the first couple of weeks will be, what do you think are the biggest risk factors to health for teenagers right now? And you send them on the walk, kinesthetic walk perhaps. Google slow chat health kinesthetic and you'll see a couple of blog posts that I wrote. Get kids moving, getting them standing up. If it's good for our ADHD kids, it's good for all of our kids, all right? Let kids know they can stand up and stretch in the back of the room. As long as it doesn't impact the learning environment, I don't really care what you do. If you need to get up and just randomly put something in the garbage, then do it if it helps you focus. Jennifer says, we advocate for short five physical activity brain breaks in all classroom. Jennifer, I'm gonna ask you to think about the language there. Instead of a brain break, call it a brain boost. Okay, we're not giving the brain a break. We're boosting the brain. We're invigorating it. We're getting more oxygen to the brain. And we're also going to tie that movement piece to that learning piece. I have a really good question matrix activity where I picked up a ball from Five Below. Everything's $5 or less. It's like the Dollar Tree, but for rich people. And I wrote keywords on the panels. And we throw it around the classroom. And wherever your thumb lands, it is a prompt for a question. Google slow chat health question matrix. It's a great way to get kids to ask deeper, more probing, more meaningful questions. The questions will never be the same again in the classroom. Brain boosts. And make it intentional as well. It shouldn't be, oh, we're 5 minutes in, everybody cross the middle line. You know, it's not that, okay? It's more than that. Make it something intentional. Alex, shoot, who's Alex? Who's really, I follow somebody on social media. Alex is going to kill me. I can't remember his name. Alex says to his students in the classroom, instead of saying, give me your attention, he says, give me your abtention. And kids, students have to tuck in their abs and point their toes to him while they're sitting in the chair. So again, it's just something a little bit more intentional. Whenever he does group work, instead of saying to students, when you finish, sit quiet, he says, when you finish, stand up. Well, now he's got his experts who have finished the activity. If it's an activity that needs to be graded, they can then go and grade. I do some things in health class, like little bingo cards and fill in the blanks. When the group finishes, I say, you go and grade other students now. Now I've got pockets of other students grading instead of finishing and just sitting quiet. It's just simple changes to the way you teach that just makes the movement more meaningful. Jennifer also talks about stories. Yeah, try and use stories as much as you can. We know it engages the brain. We know that kids then see themselves in those stories. Make sure that you, if you're showing photographs of kids, make sure they look like your kids. If you're giving names, make sure the names are like the kids' names that you have at school. I try and use non-gender specific names about all of my examples, which is really good because then when students give feedback, they always say he or her or they. And I'm like, it wasn't a boy. Was it? And I always ask them, why are you throwing a gender to that? What made you think it was a boy? Just to make them think. Brain boost, brain breaks. Look out for the work of Mike Kajala. He's got a TED Talk and he just pushed out some new resource cards and videos that can be used in your classroom. Hold tight and I'll find Mike Kajala. Kinesthetic classroom. Here goes Mike. He always shares stuff about movement. Brain primers. He pushed them out with Dr. Lynn Kenny. They're called Moving Minds Brain Primers cards. Moving Minds Brain Primers cards. In one of the links, find me on Pinterest. I think I shared my Pinterest link. I'll double check that. I've got 150 posts on Pinterest that link the brain and movement, the brain and activity. There's posters, there's resources. There's a great thing that Tracy can do and get her kids moving at the same time. print off some documents that are easy to read or resources that are easy for the read, and then get the kids to walk the track while reading information about the brain and movement, maybe doing it as a jigsaw activity. So five kids read one resource, another five read another, and then get them to come back and pair. And the good thing about doing movement in the classroom is that not many teachers are doing it. So once your kids realize how beneficial it is, they'll start challenging other teachers as well. And they'll say, well, I'm allowed to move in the health classroom. Why can't I move in the social studies classroom? Make them challenge other teachers. I like to do that. Jennifer sharing drinkmilk.com. Muga yoga poses is a PDF that you can download. Thank you for sharing that, Jennifer. Jennifer just got a new Block Rocker speaker, the Ion 4 from Costco. If you're looking for a Block Rocker, the Block Rocker from Costco is amazing. It's the lightest, most powerful Block Rocker that they've got. You can pair them. You can pair multiple Block Rockers around the gym space. And you can even turn fancy lights on as well. And there's also one of those charging pads on the top. So if you've got an up-to-date phone, you can lay your phone on top and it'll actually charge your phone while you are playing music. I'm here all day, folks. I see Tracy just smiling. Keep them coming. Kent has created a read and ride room to give students additional opportunities throughout the school day. Yeah, whenever there's downtime, make spaces available to students to put some of this stuff into play. So it looks like Kent's kids, in fact, Kent, I've seen you share that before, have a space where kids can go and read and write. We have open gym. So if we've got gym spaces that are open during the lunch spaces, we have teachers that will sit there for a stipend and they'll sit and they'll grade, but kids can be active. They can go down to the workout rooms. They can be in some of the gym spaces and just shoot hoops. Any opportunity to get kids active. Parent Teacher Association, when there's exam time, they'll come in and they'll give out brain break activities. They'll give out stress relief balls. They even give away snacks. So they do granola bars or bananas and get kids eating while they're ready to study for finals. Someone shared Tigger on the screen. Is that because I'm A.A. Milne and somebody called A.A. Milne wrote Winnie the Pooh? Kent says, another idea is to create a kinesthetic cart for classroom teachers to use. Yes, Kent. Make it easy for other teachers. Don't let them push back. Make it easy. All right, give them a couple of laminated cards that they can use. I like that. Kent's got great ideas. Kent's on at 12:30.
Real quick, I just put it in the chat. I reached out to Playworks because they provide a lot of resources that are free. They have some that are free. They have some that are paid, but they just released their Safe Return activity book. Or activity plans. It's zero equipment to minimal equipment along with social distance guidelines. I put the link in the chat as well.
Playworks.org. Thank you, Brian. Playworks.org. There's some great links in the chat. The chat will be archived. Perhaps Tracy, you can go back and cherry pick some of those and maybe push those out as well.
Do I turn? Here?
And then I am going to update my slide. I'll have one final slide at the end with some links as well. Maybe I can do that. I can hear someone talking in the background. I'll put my walking curriculum, I'll put my Pinterest link, and I'll put the generic TED document that you can share. I think now I probably need to go and say hi to my family.
And Andy, I'm going to let you take a deep breath. Everybody give him a big round of applause, silent cheer, whatever you want to do. It was awesome. You've stayed with us extra. We so appreciate it. We've turned, we've taken so many notes. My brain is spinning. I want to be in your class, so sign me up as one of your students. I don't know how that works with me teaching at the same time, but I'll figure it out. And Kent is on at 12:30, so as Andy let you know, because he even knew our directions, you can stay on, but we are going to turn the recording off. So go grab some lunch. Go take care of your business, and we will see everybody at 12:30. Thank you again, Andy.
Good job. Thank you, everybody.